Continuation of our interview with Mr. Nathan Snyder, tape 4, side 1. Yes, what happened when you encountered this...
The first thing they said is naturally, halt. And when he said halt, he said, hands up. We had to drop the 2 bags. And the bags, when they were falling to the floor with all those iron
horseshoes,
it was making a terrible noise, so they were very suspicious that we have ammunition there. We dropped them, and they said, where are you coming? And we told them that we just came. Your friends told us to go and plunder and take, which we didn't leave for the, from down here. They said, don't you know it's curfew? They said, the time is over. I don't remember the time, but it says, it was 5 o'clock, was the last. Now you cannot walk on the street. What are you doing here?
Oh.
So we said, who are you? Says, Jews? And I said, Heil Hitler, I'm a Volksdeutsche. And my friend was near me,
yes.
And he did not.
He didn't denounce
it. He didn't denounce it. That is one good faith in a human being.
Well,
and a friend, wasn't a friend of mine before, I just met him.
Yeah, just luck.
Just luck.
Luck.
He could have said, he's a Jew, but
sure.
He didn't.
Sure.
And so he says, los, run. So then we begged him, we said, look, we are Volksdeutsche. We don't have any parents. We are going to run also, but we have nothing. This is our belongings on this earth. But you let us take the bags. So he opened the bags and he saw there is inside schmattes. I mean, all those shoes and all that. He says, go ahead, take it, but run. We know the old trick of the Germans. They say run and they shoot you in the back. So we were running zigzag.
And the Ukrainian also was somewhat careful.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Then we came to a crossroad, and he lived in a different section. He said to me, good luck, goodbye, and he took off left, and I went right. I went to my street. I will never forget the street. The street was called Jeremia Ionesco, was the street which I supposed to go, our house was.
Which means?
That street was called Jeremia Ionesco. That street, which is apparently changed today in Romania, and that is the street where we live. And as I was going around the corner, here is a jeep passing by with 4 SS. They stop right away, and all with the automatic machine guns stop. And here, single, I was more suspicious. Hand up, stop, and who are you? You're a Russian spy. You're a Jew. I says, no, I'm a Volksdeutsche. And I made a salute, the awful salute, which actually saved my life. And I told him, half and crying, not actually crying, but I make believe that a young boy, I have a sick mother, and my father is fighting on the front someplace. We are ready to leave too, but in the case we cannot, we have to survive. So that's, why should I take it home? One says, take it, the other one says, no, leave it. So finally they decide to let me go, and he says, take it. And I encountered one more, exactly 400 yards from my house.
Another unit.
Okay. My uncle, my mother, my aunt were looking out from the basement. They were hidden in the cellar, looking out from the tiny little window.
Waiting for you.
Waiting for me.
Mm-hmm.
You could hear artillery shots, the skies lighting. The Russian, at that point, the Russian were trying to cross the river. There was a big battle was going on. So you could see, when it gets dark, you could see the flashes of the light in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize the danger, but I would not let those bags go. Those are my bags. Somebody else will leave the bags and run for your life. I had to have those bags. So, right, was about 300-400 yards, I would say, from my house. I could not show him where I live because they might follow me and find everybody there. So I figured I have to outmaneuver them. And the same story, you know, I was late coming because it's heavy bags, and I said, curfew, you know, you'd be shot. You can be shot right now because you are not allowed to be on the street. And I said, I begged him, and I said, again, the salute, and that awful salute, which I despised it, but saved my life. And I told him, I says, please, Let me take that. This is my only belongings I have. Mm. I'm an orphan. Now, this time I changed my story. I'm an orphan. I have nobody. And where do you go? Where do you live? He says, I live someplace. I don't have nowhere under a house, under a doorstep or someplace. I gave him some foolish story. So they said, fine. He said, all right, can you run? And so I knew that old saying, Germany say, you can you run, they shoot you in the back. That's a pleasure for them, for mm. them to do that. Mm. So I figured, I take that risk. And I grabbed the two bags, and I was tired already from mm. lifting those bags. So I was dragging them, actually, on the floor. And I was running also on zigzag, but running for my life. And that street bends. So in the meantime, I looked back, and the Jeep disappeared. Mm. So what I did, as I was passing in front of our courtyard, I threw the two bags in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I threw one back in, and the second, so I was free. As long as I threw them into the yard, I was personally free, but I could not enter the yard for fear that maybe
they're
following me and they discovered everybody. So I was running, it's a little bit complicated, I was running around the bend to the corner into a courtyard. From there I climbed two different fences, and from under fences and under a tree, and I landed into the yard where I live, and it became darker. And when I walked in, the reception I had there was unbelievable. My mother almost had a heart attack. My uncle was speechless. Mm. And my aunt, and it says, you're out of your mind. Mm. You lost your mind. Mm. You know you could be shot. I mean, you could have brought the Germans to us. What do you do? Mm. I says, I brought you in here so we can survive for 6 months. So when they opened the bags, they says, what did you bring in here? 11, 12. You bought a dozen left shoes. We cannot sell. We don't have to have one-legged men. I says, in the commotion, I grabbed whatever I could.
But then they saw the silk.
Then the silk and the yarn. This is what was very important, because
For shoemakers.
The wax yarn was big rolls. Mm. And we lived actually 6-7 months trading while the Russian came in. We lived on that. This was our income.
Some story, Mr. Snyder. Do you want to rest for a minute?
No, I can continue.
Oh,
and we stood there waiting, actually, for the Russian to enter. And naturally, we didn't sleep. It was 12 o'clock midnight, and suddenly, everything became still, quiet, done. Like from a nightmare, it became a peaceful region. Not a light, not a sound, quiet.
But no sign of troops.
No sign of troops, no sign of trucks, no jeeps, no nothing. I think those were the last troops who retreated. So we knew that you could hear a fly buzz. Something will happen.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew that the Germans have tricks.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go out from the houses. They wait for you to go out so they can kill you, shoot you, or find out your hideout. So we waited.
For days?
No.
No.
At 1 o'clock, no one slept. Oh. And I understand later in conversation with other Jews and even non-Jews, no one slept.
Mm.
1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. At 5 o'clock in the morning, we heard a noise like rumbling trucks or tank treads from far away.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going on for hours. What happened actually is the Russian have broken through with ponton bridges over the big river and are advancing to the city. So again, I was adventurous. And I walked out from the house into the streets. The streets were deserted, but here and there somebody else came out from the house, because we didn't see no Germans.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see the Russians, we didn't see the Germans. But we heard the noise of the rumbling trucks. So, around 7 o'clock in the morning, we seen the first liberators, the Russian troops. And they were going undercover alongside the houses. And to me, they were not the same Russian like in 1940. They were Mongols.
Mongols,
Siberian troops, they were the Mongols, but it's like solid eyes, which mm-hmm. I have not seen in 1940.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you frightened?
No, I wasn't. I was very happy. They were all battle ready, with full automatic, ready, what we call, say, combat ready, going around alongside, from both sides of the, around the houses. And when they saw us, the first thing they said in Russian, "Der Nemtsy, der Faschista, where are the Nazis, where are the fascists?" And we told them, we are Jews.
Did they know that word?
Evrei.
But I mean, did they...
In Russian, Jew means Evrei, so we told them, we Evrei.
But as
yeah, they knew.
Mongolians, would they have
they,
heard?
They knew. I said, where are the Germans?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, the Germans must be left on the, you know, the main highway.
Mm-hmm.
So they were advancing, then came trucks, and then later came more troops, and...
Some European troops.
European troops mixed, and all, but the first were those Mongolian shock
mm-hmm.
troops.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, they came not as occupiers, like they entered Austria, Hungary, or other countries. They came as liberators, because this is their territory. So they brought food, they threw food from their trucks, and they threw flowers,
mm-hmm.
and they threw chocolates,
mm-hmm.
and they threw bread. They had ready baked bread for the and all the population came outside, and some jumped on the trucks and the tanks, and suddenly a couple flags came out and from hiding Russian flags,
mm-hmm.
and they put it up, and it was a mingling. They stopped, and it was a
celebration.
The day of liberation, and most of the first troops forward, they were chasing the Germans back into deep Romania.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that the Romanian troops at that time turned the coat and joined the Allies.
Mm-hmm.
The king made a pact or somehow with the Russian to fight against the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
Those Germans, actually, I understand, who left.
Don't forget your son.
The way I understood that those Germans who left, who retreated from Chernivtsi, were all captured. Because the Russian entered through Bessarabia to South Romania from near the Black Sea. And those Germans who retreated from the north to deep Romania, to old Romania, they were all captured by the Russian and so on. The Romanian actually joined. We had later the Romanian joined together to fight with the Allies against the Germans. But this wasn't our concern. We were under Russian occupation.
Mm-hmm.
The Russian did not administer the city. The troops came and went through the city because
mm-hmm.
Chernivtsi was a strategic city. There were a couple of commissars, civilian came over there. They urged that they should they should form a civilian guard until the authorities will come and establish a mayor, police,
government.
So on, for law and order, form a civilian guard. There was a Zionist movement, communist movement, and mostly youth, youngsters from age 14 to age 25. And the Russian left a lot of weapons. And they gave us those Russian automatic machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, mostly the Jews. 99%, actually 99.9% were Jews in the city, those survivors.
Did you meet any Jewish soldiers in the army?
Yes, we met some Jewish soldiers, and they said what kind of horrible stories they told us about massacres. And at that time we found out about Kiev. And we found out in every city they massacred thousands and thousands of families.
Who?
The Germans.
And the Jewish soldiers told you these stories?
Yes, it says, you don't know what kind of horrors we went through. To see, not horrors we've seen, when we went through chasing the Germans. And he said, now the Jews from Transnistria, from that, are on their way back, but this is not a priority for us. They're coming back, they're free to go, but are they coming back with the first transports as they can come, with some of the trucks and some of the troops, and slowly some of the survivors came back. But in the meantime, the first order of the day was to form a civilian militia to protect the city for vandalism or law and order. And the Russian left, there were some organizers, left a lot of weapons there. And I found out that some of my friends from the school even are there already.
Survived.
And I remember they came to my house and says, and they threw a big automatic with a round disc, the Russian, known Russian automatic weapon. And he says, Nathan, take it and come with us. Mm-hmm. And my mother right away took a white handkerchief and wetted it and put it on my head and says, I have a terrible headache. Says, I cannot go because I have a terrible headache. The old fashioned, years ago when you had a headache, you put it on a white handkerchief, around cold compress around your forehead. And I said, no, don't do that. I'm not a coward. I will go. And she says, you will get killed. You will get killed. I said, I have to take revenge to what happened to our people, to my father. He wants to find Nazis. And not only Germans, but Nazis, criminals, murderers. We have to find them. We have to protect. This is our city. And out it went. And we joined with, I would say, 60, 70, or 80, and we went in the center of the city.
All Jewish youths.
All your Jewish youth. Went in the center of the city, and this is where one appointed himself. I understand that he was in touch with the underground Russian
partisans
and so on, so he became the chief of it. And he appointed us, says, now we're going to patrol. I want two and three together patrolling the city. Take section. You take this section. You take this area. We start patrolling. Now, we went through the synagogues. As we are in all the synagogues were all destroyed. Some of them were burned. And houses were boarded up. There was no damage done as far as war in China, because the war was outside the city. Mm-hmm. But that destruction which the Romanian and the Germans did while they were in the city. And
did you find any Jews in hiding?
No, Jews in hiding all came out.
All
came out.
And was left.
You just left. And I was more or less adventure for me to go around. I remember day and night we had to patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And we had like you have from 8 to 8 your
shift
and you from 8 o'clock to the next morning. And for 2 days we patrolled the city. And then they organized a search and destroy, or better say, search and capture of Nazi Germans who were hiding, couldn't escape SS, who were hiding between the Ukrainian population outside the city.
There were some?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very dangerous because when the Russian entered, they had bands formed, anti-communist bands, or anti-Russian bands. They were fascist bands. They were deserters from the German army, those who couldn't escape from the German army,
mm-hmm.
Those were in hiding, Ukrainians who were afraid because they married the Jews and they were afraid to couldn't escape,
mm-hmm.
those who couldn't escape, or Polish, or any undesirable Nazis, fascists, band together in the hills and into the forest, and they, Banderovcis, they called themselves Banderovcis. Banderovcis is an, they took the name after a General Banderov.
Mm-hmm.
In the First World War, they had Piklurtsev. They were named after a General Piklurtsev. Piklurtsev was his name. So this Banderov was a Ukrainian general who actually betrayed the Russian. When the Germans advanced to Russia, he, being the general of the Ukrainian army, of their troops, surrendered to the Germans with the whole division.
Went over to the Germans.
Germans to fight the Bolsheviks.
Mm-hmm.
To so-called to liberate his Ukrainian nationals, and they promised him they will have an Ukrainian state by the autonomic state and so on. So his name was Banderov. So actually those remnants of bandits called themselves Banderovcis, which is in plural.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that Bandarov ran away, succeeded to run away to Germany, and he lived there till the late 50s in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Russian KGB got him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they got him there. He was there. Actually, he also was participating in Voice of America in Germany, a propaganda against Russia,
mm-hmm.
Because he was anti-communist, what no matter what kind of criminal he was.
Yeah, we take them.
Those Ukrainians who actually, division of Ukrainian, they called them dobrovolchis, volunteers, who went to fight with the Germans against the Russians, I understand they were the biggest killers of the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
They helped the Germans killing Jews.
Mm-hmm.
They were the tool of killers,
mm-hmm.
the tools of killing.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans liked that. Why should they do the dirty work?
Yeah.
So those who couldn't escape organized under bands of in the woods. And it was dangerous to go outside the city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happened incidents that Jews went back to see the little towns where they belongs and so on, and they were massacred and killed.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them. As a matter of fact, it happened two cousins of mine who their throats were cut. They went back in a town, not in my town, but two towns away.
By Ukrainians?
By the so-called Bandarovs. They mm-hmm. killed them, and the Russian troops found them. The Russian did not have enough troops to go and wipe them out, because most of the troops were fighting the Germans on the battlefront. So it was 1944. It was even before the landing of June 4th in Normandy. So the Russians were busy chasing and fighting the Germans. I understand at that time we did go out. In the meantime, a lot of Germans were found hidden in basements and attics
mm-hmm.
by non-Jews who were hiding them. And they were all
assembled.
Naturally, there were Russian troops there too.
Yeah.
We were not under our control. They didn't say the city is yours and you rule it now. But we were like helping them.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, for us it was a revenge. So they gathered a lot of, even they brought them back. Some of the Russians who captured them in cornfields, they couldn't escape.
Mm-hmm.
They brought them back into the
mm-hmm.
city. And they assembled them right in the middle. Chernivtsi had a big center. It's called the Ringplatz, which means a round circle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like here in Philadelphia, in the city hall, we do not have a plaza, but it's a big, big plaza. It's called the Ringplatz. It's like in the center where the city hall was and the big government buildings and so on. They assembled them over there, and the Russians kept them there as prisoners. But our aim is to go out and find not so much the Germans, but Ukrainian murderers who ran away from the small towns. We figured that in small towns they obvious can be discovered, but in a big city like Chernivtsi, they can get lost. So some of them ran away to the big city, not knowing the facts that most of them ran with the German troops as they retreated back to Hungary, Austria, into Germany,
mm-hmm.
who later claimed to the American troops they were anti-communists, poor slave laborers deported by the Germans to work in the mines and in the slave camps, and they don't want to go back to Russia because they are anti-communists,
mm-hmm.
so they would like to live in the West, in the food, English and American, and all the, they even got help from some of them from the joint distribution and from the so-called UNRWA, they got blankets and chocolates and food and stayed in the DP camps in Germany, and later, 2 years or a year later, they were immigrated to Canada, Australia, South America, and all over the world, fooling them, giving false names and false ages and so on.
Yeah.
And but everybody was born in Kiev and Moscow. No one was born in small little towns, but everybody was born in Moscow or in Kiev. And they fooled authorities, and we know from now that we discover there's one Kovalchuk still living in here who was a murderer, and there's thousands of them which
yeah.
we don't even know about them, or we don't want to go after them, not we, but authorities. So get away from that subject. Our aim is to find those murderers. So we went into towns, and they succeeded of bringing back, but not too far, just 5-6 miles out of the city.
You did find some?
Oh yes, they brought them back and had them assembled together with those, also we found Romanian cowards, Romanian soldiers, because they were considered cowards, who could not retreat or didn't have a time to retreat, and they were hiding or didn't want to fight anymore, mm-hmm. the Germans, or didn't want to fight in the war, so they were hiding in little, as villagers, as peasants.
Mm-hmm.
And they were discovered by the Germans, by the Russian troops, brought back as prisoners. Some in uniform and some without.
So you must have enjoyed that.
Yes. The one thing which I didn't enjoy, but I was too young to understand, that the Romanians who were assembled in that Ringplatz, a day later, they were kept over there as prisoners, and I remember there was a whole group, and as my memory dictates, the Romanians were released. The Russian didn't consider too much the Romanians fighters.
Well, they were now allies.
Not only that, but when they were captured, they were still, they were not allies, they were not fighting now the Russian, they were still remnants of
the old army.
The old army. They were making fun of them. They still take them off their shoes, take their weapons, rip off their epaulets, kick them in behind and says, go home to your family, you coward.
No respect for them.
No respect for them. They kicked them in the behind and they didn't want to take them as prisoners. They said, go home.
Mm.
But this wasn't the fate of the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
Because those Germans who were captured, the Russian killed them. Right in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
They put up machine guns and have them. Because most of the Germans who were caught were actually SS.
Mm-hmm.
The Russian had a code. I think it was from Stalin who issued that the code in 1943. Any SS or Gestapo should not be taken a prisoner alive.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not regular army.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were all in black uniforms. They couldn't hide because they also had that under tattoo under the arm.
Mm-hmm.
But the Russian had them all killed. And I understand some of the bodies were hanging around for 24 hours right there
in the square.
It wasn't for us a pleasure to see that because we had never really, in a way we felt sorry, even when they were our tormentors, but we felt sorry because they figured maybe one of them is innocent and does have a wife and children home, and maybe he was forced into that. But that is war. That is the fate of war. That is destiny. That patrolling was for a short life, because after 3-4 days, the Russian brought their own authorities. And they came a chief of the militia, and a couple of judges, and a couple of authorities, and government, and so on. So they eliminated all that so-called self-appointed civilian guard.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to surrender all the arms, all the weapons, and
mm-hmm.
so on. And then they opened recruitments.
To their army?
To the army. Every youngster from age 16 had to register to be inducted into the army.
You were then how old?
In 1944, I was born in 26, I was...
14.
Eighteen years old. Born 1926, this
oh,
is 1944.
26.
I was 18 years old.
18.
Every youngster has to report for indoctrination, registration, naturally, go and fight. It was an honor, go and fight the fascists to the end, to victory. And everybody was going to register, and I registered too. At the same time, we went to school, because it doesn't mean that you go in and you register, you take it right away. So I went
You and your sister?
I don't remember my sister. My sister was much younger, but I went to school, and it wasn't a school. It wasn't gymnasium, or it wasn't high school, and it wasn't elementary school. It was one school. It's called the Russian school.
Mm-hmm.
They teach you Russian. You talk in Russian.
Mm-hmm.
You learn Russian, another language, and you
no
learn
other language.
No other language, and you learn their mathematics and physics and chemistry and history and propaganda and the language in the school.
By the way, what language did you use when you spoke to the Russian soldiers?
Russian.
You knew a little.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Russian because I knew Ukrainian because a lot of Ukrainians lived there. So mm-hmm. Russian and Finnish, just the accent is a little bit different.
How was life in school?
Well, we enjoyed it in school because most of the professors were, some of them were Russian, some of them were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned, but we didn't know that it was only a short life because short-lived studies, because eventually we will have to go to the
army.
To the army. But we learned that, and it was very interesting and very enjoyable. But then we
and
had...
And your uncle, was he required to work for the Russians?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle got a job back in the same factory, and mm-hmm. the factory belonged to the government. Everything mm-hmm. was nationalized. There was no more
free
private, no homes. Nothing belongs to you. Everything belongs to the government. You're an object of the government. So, but people had the liberty and the freedom. And,
too, continuing our interview with Mr. Snyder, was there enough food now?
Yes, food was brought out from the peasants of Aram brought food. It was an exchange. The Russian brought in. It was more organized. There were some stores open, and like I mentioned before, my mother had we had no income, so another exchange
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the items were scarce. You couldn't find no leather, shoes, clothing, wool,
this
linen.
Is when the yarn came in handy
and
the
yarn
silk.
Came in handy, that's right.
Excuse me, wasn't it that the money wasn't worth nothing anyway? You needed
no, there was rubles.
Yeah?
Yeah, rubles.
Romanian money wasn't
was nothing,
anything.
But rubles. Mm-hmm. And people were living, making a living. And more survivors came back from concentration camps, and people have seen and were lucky to see sick. People came back sick. And then we found out about, the war was still going on. This is 1944.
Mm-hmm.
And then we heard about the horrors of the concentration camps.
First time.
We heard about the horrors in Auschwitz. First time we
who
heard
who told
about
you
all
the
Russian Jews who were in the Russian army, Russian themselves, news, the order of death, Stalin, and...
The Russians supplied some of this news?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They were telling us, and mostly Jews who were in the Russian army and who traveled around, because you could travel in all the occupied territories where the Russian occupied, you could travel and look for your loved ones or relatives. It was like disorganized. It wasn't an organized police state at that time. Their aim was to destroy, to crush fascism. So everybody could join. It wasn't so much, I would say, dictatorship.
Mm-hmm. You felt free.
Yes. Totalitarian regime we know as of now wasn't, it didn't exist at that time because it was like wartime.
Did you have any interest in going back to your old town?
Oh, sure.
Oh, you did.
But we were told not, because our town was heavily overtaken by the Banderovsers.
Uh-huh.
Because two of my cousins were killed about 10 miles away. And the Russian didn't, were against it. They said, do not. They themselves, in instances, they killed a lot of Russian troops. The Russian trucks or jeeps went in, adventured themselves to go in into the back countries, like in the villages, never came back.
I see.
So the Russian did not have the Russian really
mobilization
to fight them.
Mm-hmm.
So they were ruling over the mountains and forests, and that was a problem. So the Jews never went back. They said, one day we'll go back. I wanted to go back for one reason, to see my home where I was born and see the grave of my father where he is buried.
Mm-hmm.
They were told they buried it all in a mass grave, but where the location, make a mitzvah, maybe take him out and put him on the cemetery.
Jewish
cemetery was desecrated, I mean, there was nothing left from it and so on. And then they took out the stones for pavement and for buildings and so on. But I never went back, my mother never went, no one went back to that town to this day. And my aim is one time in life to go back to that town.
So you were relatively free in the first weeks of the Russian occupation.
Right.
And you were
and then started
school.
Mobilization. After school, and I would say about 3 months later, it was March, April, May, June, around July, we didn't finish the school. They said, you come back from war, then you finish school. We have to go and fight. So they took, everybody got their, induction, just a letter home, and invited them to come.
To join the Red Army.
The Red Army. And more and more and more went and so on. There was no way that you could avoid it, because that is an impossibility. And I wanted to go, because I wanted to take revenge for my father and for all of the rest of the Jews who were massacred by the fight the fascists. My mother was very scared, because she lost her husband, my father, so she wanted me alive, and she knew that going as cannonfoot into the war, we didn't mean nothing to the Russians. To sacrifice 100,000 soldiers for their aim and their victory,
yeah.
People don't mean nothing for them. Numbers, I mean. So many went and never came back. Then I was taken in for induction into that army camp, which I went very proudly. What actually happened is...
Was the camp close to Chernivtsi? Or did you go east?
It was in Chernivtsi.
In Chernivtsi.
It was an old Romanian military camp,
mm-hmm.
which they had a headquarters for recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is that those who had some education were taken into special schools,
mm-hmm.
and most of them were Jewish, and even some non-Jewish who had education. Even some of the peasants, but who had a little bit of education, who were able to read and understand a little bit
mm-hmm.
mathematics or physics or so on. They were taken into a school, a special course, and not sent in as infantry, just cannon foot to the front line, which were integrated into the Russian army. There was no separate in a special school, and you had to bribe to get to that special school. And why you had to bribe to get to that special school? Because there you were, they were serving good food, and you had good. Conditions, quarters to living quarters, and you for 90 days, for 3 months, you were there safe from the massacre on the front line, and you never know what will happen, because we knew that the biggest battle at that time was going on in Königsberg, the whole line of the front, Königsberg in Ost-Prussia, Budapest, Hungary, Warsaw, Poland, and Budapest. Those are the three major battles that were going on at that time. Between the Russian and the Germans, they were pushing into the German border.
And when you say bribe, how was that accomplished?
In other words,
what did you do?
The Russians are known of taking bribe, And with a couple thousand ruble, you could bribe an officer to admit you to that school. So this is what happened. And my mother did bribe. It was middleman, not direct. Somebody who knew also, an officer who was knew that friend and so on. And I got into that school. That school didn't realize that school was belonged to the pyrotechnic division, which was nothing else like a school for removing mines, which is called demolition squad. Yeah, you're going out, you're trying to escape from the window, and you fall into a hole into the other side. So in the meantime, we got news from friends who went into and fell. A very good friend of mine, his parents got a letter with the letters used to come from the authorities with a black rim, and he fell for the fatherland in Königsberg. He died there. So we knew that life doesn't mean nothing, but you go and you have a chance of 20 of coming back and 80 not. The battles were there, very crucial battles of crossing or crushing the main
German
offensive. Yes. And so we went to the school, and we were assigned to the school. And we were a group of, I would say, about 30 to 35 youngsters. I would say half of them were Jews and half of them non-Jews. And we had a commander who was a Cossack, tall, dark hair, dressed as a Cossack, with those knives on the side. They have like on the side, on the pockets, knives sticking out with his big fur hat, dressed like a Cossack. And he was the commander, he was the captain. His name was Vasily Ivanovich Grigorovich, was his name, so we knew that he's a Cossack. And then he had officers underneath him, a lieutenant and sergeants and so on. The sergeant happened to be a Ukrainian who was a Jew hater. He was an anti-Semite. And we were there in the school, and we had classes, half a day classes, half a day practice. What we were learning is demolition, how to take out all kinds of mines, Russian mines and American mines and English mines and German, Hungarian and Finland, which were allies to the German, and naturally German mines, that was the most important. And then we had practice. And we were learning also the technical part of it, how it's constructed, how it functions, and so on. And then we moved from there, we moved closer to the front line, and we were integrated to a division which was called, at that time, Demolition Squad, I forgot in Russian. We were attached to the military police, because our job was to remove the mines from the fields before the troops advanced, and also remove the mines of the territory which are occupied, the remaining mines which the Germans have minefields all over the place, at the same time help combat the military police or the army, those Banderovs, and we had nothing to do. They used to take us into the woods to fight and capture those Banderovs. Any available troops who are they sent in to fight them, to destroy them, which was impossible at that time. Then they took us out actually in the real world, which was death and terror and danger.
This was now west toward Königsberg?
No, that was in Poland.
In
Poland, and Galicia and Poland in that section. And we were attached to the army. I don't remember if it was the 4th Ukrainian or the 2nd Belarusian or whatever it is. But we had our group, our company, that captain was our commander, and that lieutenant and sergeant and so on. And as a matter of fact, we were dressed as soldiers, but we also had the emblem of our military police in here was red and blue on our epaulets, which means that we could also when they have prisoners of war, German prisoners of war.
Arrest.
Not arrest, but help transport them, watch them
guard them.
Participating, watching the prisoner of wars when they used to take them in cattle trains back to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
We had to take them like from this point to that point, and then other groups take them over and take them further down, or watching prisoner of camps. So actually we were more like
miscellaneous,
but more in, yes, in that, not really combat fighting on the front, you know, that. So that was a good point in there.
Yes, sure.
And one day they took us out to the real world, which was actually taken out a minefield, which was not too far from the battle, because we had the artillery and the fights going on,
mm-hmm.
and so on. And a lot of died over there.
A lot of your friends.
Yes. For me, it was at that time, didn't realize what that is.
Still an adventure.
Yes, an adventure. For me, it was a big adventure at that time. But in one way, I wanted to go and revenge the death of our brothers and my father and so on. In the same time, I had no fear. In the same time, it was an adventure. And I remember we were stationed we arrived actually in a small town, and then in outskirts of the town, they said that town was a strategic pathway where the Germans retreated, and the whole town is mined. It was deserted.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why we knew, because we found cows blown up, and dogs blown up, trees and houses, and everything is mined. The trees, the houses, the roads, the fields, the troops could not pass. But they were not the first troops who were fighting, but the other troops of occupation or supply, they couldn't go through, they sent us in.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the specialists. So...
How long did you serve there?
And under that, I served, I would say, it's about September or October.
And you cleared the area out?
Oh, yes, we cleared them out. And because we were specialized. We had, first of all, we had the mine detectors on Baderan,
mm-hmm.
and some of them who were plastic mines, we had to use our bayonets and just find them. We were specialized, we were trained for that. Then they had those mines, we called the S mines, which were wired with green thin hair wires, and when they explode, it's like they turn together. Then they had tank mines. We were taken out a day, our group, at least a couple thousand mines.
Mm.
And then as soon as you take the mines out, the capsules were taken out, the mine was not in danger anymore. We should throw the mines. I remember we had full
mountains
of those mines. We were not dangerous before the capsules were out. Now the capsules, they look like a bullet. They were dangerous when they exploded.
How did you defuse them?
How do you defuse them? There's a little spring, and as long as you grab that spring, each mine has a different mechanism. Then it's no more dangerous, but the capsule itself is explosive.
Okay.
I collected a lot of souvenirs, and us, being as a soldier, we had a satchel like, and I filled it up, day by day, I filled it up full of those capsules. Didn't realize that I'm sitting in a time bomb, but for me it was an adventure, and even we used to take some of the mines and put them up and for target shooting and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there, and every single day we had
hundreds of mines too.
Yes, but we also had casualties. And as the people were dwindling down, they brought more reinforcement. Russian, actually, not from our group, just Russian, who were assigned to that from the same occupation.
Mm.
So the group had to be the number of 35. And I remember that that sergeant, who was
the Ukrainian,
he was blown up, and I felt so bad for him, because he went into the field, and they brought him out on a stretcher, and the guns were hanging down. And I looked at him, and it wasn't horrified to me, because I figured that that's what happened. Didn't realize what happened to me, too. We were going into the field in different pattern. It was like a plan, because we had no map. Russian maps we had from Russian mines, but not from the Germans, so we had to go by puzzle. I remember that suddenly, in the back, to the left, boom, an explosion. And the one that remains is pieces of clothing or flesh on the trees left, and there was nothing to collect. But it didn't scare us or me personally, because...
You thought it would not
One happened, and it was dumb. I was a little bit afraid, but it didn't scare me or others, too. And that was going on for months. One day they send us into the woods, what we call a search and destroy, to get those banderovces. Because what happened is a couple of trucks of soldiers went into one of those major holdout where they were stationed, and they never came back. Mm. They were all killed. So they figured they wanted to send in more, and they sent in troops, and they sent us to help them. And that I was scared. That I was scared, because I figured you're fighting against the unknown. It's partisans. The wheel has changed around. It's like fighting the Viet Cong in Vietnam. You don't know whom you're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
How
long were you in that?
We went to two missions. We went,
mm-hmm.
And in both missions, what they did actually, they didn't capture anybody because the Russian. In the meantime, the Russian had brought more troops from the front back to combat those forces, those guerrillas.
Mm-hmm.
They had more pieces of artillery. What they were doing is they were surrounding the entire forest from all around with cartouches and artillery and decimated the whole forest. So it was a victory for us because we didn't have to go combat to combat. There was no one to take just
prisoners.
So they, I understand they had bunkers under the ground, but they eliminated everything, destroyed it. This is,
mm-hmm.
They're known for that. They don't play around.
Total.
Like, there is no civilization or in civilized manner. They just massacred everybody and destroyed everything. But I went for two of those missions. One time we went nighttime for a mission, and they did capture three Germans who were in civilian clothes,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of Ukrainians.
Mm-hmm.
They were hiding out in a big farm, like,
mm-hmm.
and they found them in a barn, and they were taken away, and I'm sure they
shot.
They were executed, yes. They didn't take no trial. There's no trial there. They took them on the site, apparently, and they were executed.
And then you went back to demolition work?
I went back to demolition work.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized, between us, our fellow friends and so on, that we're in danger. Because they were talking about us sending us to the front line. And that is the biggest danger, because when you go to the front line, the suicide squad, it means between no man's land, when the Russians are on one side and the Germans on the other side, and between them is called a no man's land, a stretch of 2-3 miles.
Mm-hmm.
This is where they send in the demolition squad to clear that particular area before the troops can advance.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that is like signing your own death sentence. And for some reason, we had in our group one of a guy who was like 26 or 27, was much older, and he said he can make a deal with the captain, but we didn't have any money. We all give our watches, because they love watches. And I had a watch at that time, a doctor.
What kind of deal?
We gave him the watches, and he's going to keep us longer there.
I see.
And I started sending us
to the front
line. And we were ready to give our watches, and then we were told that one day that in the evening he's going to meet with us. He's going to meet with us. With us, the group, we were at that time about 15 to 18 Jewish guys. He's going to meet with us. And he met with us, and I remember it was like outside, and it was in a village, outside the house, under a tree, we were sitting down, it was leisure time. And he sat down and he said, let me tell you something. And we had a lot of respect for the guy, and we knew that, Cossacks are fearless fighters. My name is Vasily Ivanovich Grigorovich, and you know I am a Cossack, but I am not. I'm a Jew.
Well,
my name is Abraham Schwartzman. I am from Kiev.
Good heavens.
He says, I am an Israeli. I'm a part of the Israeli folk, Yiddish folk. The reason why I'm dressed that way, you will ask a question, why? He says, my wife, my children, my in-laws, my entire family, a family of 40, were massacred in Babi Yar. Kiev. I was in the army, I was lucky. When I came back to Kiev, they were all massacred. At that time, I figured if I get captured into the rush, into the German hands, as a Jew, naturally will kill me. As a Cossack, I have better chance of survival. Mm. So he dressed himself, because he was very tall, with black hair, he fit in to be a Cossack. He assumed the name of Vasily Grigorovich Ivanovich. As a Cossack, the German will never suspect that he's a Jew.
Mm. And neither did you.
No. He says, let me tell you something. It's good to fight the Nazis. We should fight them to the end and take revenge for the blood they spilled. Mm. But after the war, he says, I go to you, Jerusalem. This is where I belong.
Well,
that's right.
Well, some story.
That's right. He said, first of all, we weren't sure that maybe he's bluffing. He says, Leshuna Abab Yerushalayim. Mm. He says, I am a Jew. He says, oh yes. He says, look, I'm trying to protect you guys as much as I can. There is anti-Semitism in the Jewish army, in the Russian army. They don't like the Jews in here. They hate the Jews. Mm-hmm. They hate the Germans first, but the Jews second. And don't think that they're your friends. Mm-hmm. And I have learned on my own skin, but this has to remain very discreet. Mm. Because you just uncover me, then I'm done. Mm. Because in case it goes in war or whatever it is, I'm finished. So it was a relief to us that to find a Jewish officer who is
friend. Yes, he said as soon as he gets
He said as soon as I come over closer to the western countries like Austria, I will go to Italy, and from there I am going to go to Palestine. At that time was in Israel, to Palestine, because this is where I belong. Mm. And
did he ever explain what his background
was?
Oh yes,
he says.
Did he come of
his
a religious
father
family?
Himself, he wasn't religious, but he belonged, he said they belonged to the Shomer HaTzair.
His father?
Their family and so on. He was
Zionist.
A Zionist, and there's a lot of big movement in Kiev it was. He said he has a lot of cousins who live in Israel, in Palestine, mm-hmm. who left 30 years ago, who live in there. At least they're alive. It's mm-hmm. It's very hard life, but they're alive. And
so you stayed in this unit
Yeah,
for
he
a while.
Says that watches was only, that watch business was only a bluff.
A maneuver
to get you
to
in.
To get you
here.
Together.
Right.
So he returned them to you.
He didn't even take them.
He didn't even take them.
Yeah, we were supposed to surrender our watches.
He just wanted to meet with you.
That's exactly. He didn't know how and what way to do that. So
yes.
So he says, I will protect you as much as I can. Mm. But my lieutenant is a Jew hater. He doesn't know I'm Jewish.
Mm.
And even if you say to him and he smiles and so on, but he is not your friend.
Mm.
So, he did everything in power to keep us there. And late in September, it was beyond his power. And they attached us to the main division.
Mm.
And for some reason, we lost contact with him. Apparently, he was reassigned or whatever it is.
Mm.
I'm sure that he is today living in Israel, because if his aim was to escape, he will.
I hope he did.
Yeah.
And what happened to you, Mr. Schneider?
Then what happened is, when they attached us to the main division, they gave us ration, shaved our heads because of
disease
lice and so on, because
typhus.
We knew that we were going to the front line, yeah.
Mm.
And gave us ration, brown sugar, dried bread, and cans. It was American. We saw for the first time written in Russian, imported from America. It was called Svinaya Tushenka. It means pork stew.
Mm.
It was like silver cans. So we knew that, oh yes, and the landing was taking place already. We knew that the American, English, and the French are advancing there. The Germans are crushed from both sides. And victory will be very soon, but still battles were going on. It was the Battle of Bulge, you know, that all that we knew. And American planes came overhead, and we even saw Americans or English or French officers who are mixed with the, you know, the attachés or whatever it is, or delegations or so on.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that they were
liaison.
Liaison and so on. Mm-hmm. Then they prepared us to march down to. For some reason,
liaison.
Yeah, for some reason, I did not want to be a statistic of Caneford because we knew that how much they think about. They were aiming for one victory, and that's true. The victory was to crush the Germans, but as the years went on, the months went on, I was always aiming for survival,
mm-hmm.
and that's a human instinct. So they marched us down to the railroad. This was supposed to be embarkation taking place, going to the front line, and that happened. We were told we're going to Budapest. That was the biggest battle at that time. It was
mm-hmm.
a crucial battle in
mm-hmm.
Budapest.
I lived in Budapest.
So we were going down. They integrated us. See, every regiment, in Russian they call it sapyor. Sapyor means mine sweeper, or dynamite demolition squad. And every regiment had like a dozen or two of those attached. So they attached, but for some reason, my friends and I, we were in the same group.
Mm-hmm.
Some were taken away, attached to others, so we lost contact, but I still remained with, I would say, with 8 or 9 friends of mine into that group. And we were taken down, but one thing I don't understand, as we were gone from that camp, which was about 2-3 miles march into the, down to the railroad station to be where the embarkation took place, why did they have to have guards with the bayonets on the
side? Guarding you?
Guarding us. Because we found out later, we didn't know at that time. There's a lot of desertion was going on. A lot of desertion was going on, even Russian, original Russian.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that after the war, they were telling stories about Russian, I don't call them cowards, but guys who were smart to survive the war. They were traveling for 4 years, back and forth on trains, from east to west, from west to east, from east to west, and wherever they got caught, they were saying they went to take, to the bathroom, a leak, and they lost their train, and they put them on another train, but the train was the opposite direction. And they were...
They're looking for the units.
The units. And
mm-hmm.
this is the way, not too many. We found out after the war how they survived.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a war like that, with such a big region, almost Europe, entire Europe, from Finland to the Black Sea, naturally it's a disorganized situation. So
mm-hmm.
some of them will slip through. That's the reason they had us, they didn't want
to...
Yes. And the Russian had one single goal or method. If a commander, let's say a lieutenant, had 150 soldiers, that he has to bring them from this point, from point A to point B. And when he comes close to point B and he sees there's from the 150 to 145, his head is rolling.
Mm.
He gets executed for 5 not missing. So he will capture 5, he will kidnap
5,
he doesn't care if they're cripples,
mm.
one-legged men. It's happened, they took one-legged men who were invalids, and he says, why are you taking me? I only have 1 foot. He says, you don't have to run. You can sit on a truck and shoot.
Mm.
Shoot from a truck sitting in position.
Mm.
So they were taking people who had a bron. A bron in Russian means you are exempt from army because you are working in the electric company, the telephone company, and the gas company, in an armament factory. You are very important. They didn't care. They grabbed you. You could have paper.